That's a good question. I would definitely say that being from Memphis, like, it death has ignited a hustle in me, a different type of grit and grind, where it's the Grizzlies in me. I'm always trying to do what's next or do something better than I've done it before. I definitely see myself becoming somebody who can navigate through different areas, who's not afraid of adversity, who is not afraid of like hard times or being down for a little bit in order to get to a greater goal. Of course, Memphis is a music city. Like, it's a hub of blues and soul. Like, Stax Museum is there, Stax Records. The first radio station solely targeting Black African American audiences is in Memphis. You know what I mean? WDIA.
Welcome to another episode of the It's Just Jokes podcast. My name is Joshua Chapman, a.k.a. Slim Ballard, a.k.a. Baby Honest, a.k.a. Mr. Take Your Girl in Front of Your Face. I'm here with my co-host, as always, first, Jesse Pink.
Good.
A.k.a. Dolomite P, a.k.a. Baby Samoa Joe, a.k.a. Groovy Grizzly. Why? Because it keeps it raw on you hoes. And Derek Small.
What's going on, y'all?
A.K.A. D. Smalls, A.K.A. Anthony Mackie Jr., A.K.A. Damn, Derek, where did you find this pod? Kobe can't be with us for work reasons, but joining us today in our continuation of uplifting Black women during Women's History Month is Alexis Didaway, A.K.A. A.G.D., A.K.A. Memphis Mine, A.K.A. The Lex Mix. What's going on with you today, Lex?
Hey, what's good, y'all? Happy to be here.
And also, while we're up doing the uplifting, D, will drop some applause, drop the hand clap, because Alex is three for her grad, like,
repeat.
For grad school. Like, come on, bro. Like, we talking big time. We talking money being sent. We talking Ivy Leagues, even.
I mean,
she different. Like, come on.
The God be the glory, period. Like, that's all I can say about it. Like, yeah, I work hard, but I pray a little harder than I work. So, it all turned out.
Per. I'm sorry. I had to. I'm sorry.
Hey, I want you to go to, when stuff open back up, I want you to go to church and say that, act like, actually out loud. Like,
okay. Heard you. I got you. I got you. Now tell them the child sent me. I'll
say, well, thank you for joining us today. Thank you for taking some time out of your busy schedule and coming on this podcast.
No worries. Look, I'm honored that y'all even talk about me and ask me to come on here and talk about things that I guess I do / have done / will do. I don't know. But I'm happy to be here. Like, y'all the homies. So it makes perfect sense to me and my book.
Facts.
No, for sure. It made perfect sense to us. You know what I'm saying? You're definitely dope. So you had to have you on.
I love that.
For sure. So yeah, no, I'll just get straight into it. You know, just want to do, we always got to start off just with a wellness check. You know what I mean? Definitely got to, you know, see where you at. What's up with you? You know, what's been new? Yeah. What is up with Lex right now?
Outside of school, adjusting back to work being busy. It's our busy season right now in marketing. Weather changing, so trying to make sure I get some sunshine in, enjoy myself, like get back used to somehow assimilating back in society after being on lockdown for officially a year yesterday. I'm good. I'm in a good position to be at this stage in my life. Lots of decisions looming, lots of transitions looming, but I don't think I would have it any other way. And I'm really excited to see how the next couple of months turn out. So I'm real good. I'm real good.
Man, you know, that's always good to hear. And you mentioned being on lockdown for, you know, yesterday, the 13th, was the 1 year anniversary of all that for us. So how have you been doing during all of this? How are you also keeping like your mental health strong?
I'm not gonna lie. I think me being an only child, it didn't hit me as hard as it hit others, like when it first happened, because I'm used to being by myself. You know what I'm saying? I'm used to finding ways of entertaining myself in the house, like be it listening to music, watching my favorite shows. Like I've binged watched several series that I've enjoyed. And I'm always like on the phone, still connecting with friends and my mom and them, because I live far away from a lot of people who have been in my life for the past like 10 years. So we on the phone all the time, either way it goes. So it didn't hit me as hard on the, I guess, social staying connected aspect. But me, I like to travel. Like I was like on a plane anytime I had a 3-day weekend, which would be like once a month. Sometimes. So getting used to not only not being able to go out of the country, but not out the state, low-key not out my apartment, that was something to get used to. And I just had to remember, like, you know, it's for my own personal safety that I should be in the house and the safety of others, because I would hate to go home and have passed this on to my mama when I could have just, you know, stayed down and waited out for a few more months. So just maintaining like level-headed and looking like at the reality of the overall situation versus getting so caught up in the things I want to do, even though I know for a fact they're not in my best interest overall at the time.
Yeah, that's real. Yeah. You mentioned, I don't mean to take anything away from you, Jesse, but you mentioned some series that you binged. What's some stuff that you've been watching?
So I just finished all of The Big Bang Theory like 2 weeks ago, all 12 seasons of that. Very enjoyable. I watched Schitt's Creek. Schitt's Creek is mad funny, so if you haven't watched it, you definitely need to watch it now. I am currently on season 7 of Modern Family, and I have agreed to do a rewatch of Grey's Anatomy once I'm done with that.
Bless your heart for that.
But here's the thing, so like I was watching Grey's Anatomy back when it was like getting popular on ABC. So me and my mom used to watch it every Thursday night at 9 o'clock. So I remember a lot of the show, but I've been told I'm not gonna get the full experience if I don't start from season 1. And we ain't gonna know what's better to do. So it's like, okay, might as well just try it out. What else? Like, other than that, cause those took like a lot of time. Cause we're talking about whole sitcoms with at least 7 seasons each. Big Bang Theory is one of the longest running multi-camera sitcoms of all time. So I was just excited to be able to say I watched all of that. And it's really, really good. Other than that, I think I've just been re-watching things. Oh, I binged Snowfall. So I binged Snowfall and now I'm up to date.
Yes.
So live with
everyone.
And okay, that's it.
Yes. Let me just say, you know, as far as all the other ones you named, I haven't really tapped in with those, but The Big Bang Theory, I did not think I was going to like it, like, at first, like, yeah. Just on the surface level of what it was about. I'm like, nah, but it's like that.
It's like that, and the thing is, like, when I tell people I'm watching, they're like, you watching, like, the nerd show? And I'm like, yes, they're all very intellectual people with their own niche, but they go through real people problems, too. Like, it has a really, really good, you know, display of what actually happens when people embrace on, you know, parenthood. Like they're stopping their entire work lives or adjusting to thinking about someone else other than themselves. Like, and it was a very realistic display of that I have not seen on other networks or other sitcoms, as well as the other things that just happen when people are growing from, you know, their 20s to their 30s. Kaylee Cuoco, I think that's how you pronounce her name. She starred that show. Why are you laughing at me?
Nothing.
I tried my very, very best. Anyway, she started that show when she was like 22. She ended when she was 32. So seeing how even her and her character like evolved over that long of a time, like 12, 10 years or so, was really, really dope.
Yeah, low-key, one of my favorite episodes was when she sprained her, like she separated her shoulder and Sheldon has to come like take care of her. He has no idea like how to like really take care of a human being. Like
that's also one of Jim Parsons' favorite episodes too. Like one of his all-time faves. Mine is always like, mine is the Ball House Bazinga episode. And my favorite scene ever is when Penny gives Jim Parsons the napkin for Christmas, and he doesn't know how to respond, so he gives her all those gift baskets.
Yeah, yeah, he comes like running from the back with all these like little gift bags. Yeah, yeah,
it's little just like hella sweet moments. So, like, yeah, I'm a huge fan.
So you talked a little bit about like, you know, some challenges it is like being in quarantine, like due to the Panini Press, and like just like how it's, everything's been for you. But before, you know, I wanted you to talk about like how your experience has been in just in DC period. I wanted to just like bring you a little bit back to humble beginnings and just talk about your time at Mizzou. So I just want to know just your thoughts on how Mizzou, how your experience there at Mizzou have prepared you for where you are and even where you want to be.
So I got to Mizzou in 2014, and Mizzou was my first time living anywhere that was not Memphis. So that in itself was a huge change for me. Like, I've never been in the Midwest. I've never been anywhere outside of the South. I was not a big traveler. I've never experienced anything outside of my own home or what I was used to, like my summers in Mississippi or my time in Alabama. Like, that was it. So that being said, it was a huge shock that, one, so many people could be in one place. Like, I could go to a school with over 30,000 people. You know what I mean? Two, that I actually am a minority. Because, like, coming from Memphis, we hear about things of, like, you know, being the only Black person in a college setting or in the workplace or whatever. But Memphis is a predominantly Black city. So I have never been a minority in my classroom. You know what I mean? Everyone around me was always looking just like me. It was the other way around. I think I can name in my entire high school career a school that had 1,000 kids in it at least. I think we had maybe 20, perhaps 50 white kids at a given time. So whereas the opposite, where I'm actively searching for Black people on Mizzou's campus, it's like, oh, okay, well, this is different, you know? So that was something that I had to get used to, right? That's the reality of the situation outside of my comfort zone. And I think there is when I first experienced like adversity on several different scales. Like, I was not doing good at school at first. I was about to be kicked out of school the second semester of my sophomore year. I had to change majors immediately. I had to change my whole career path, which I always wanted to do, but because I was in the J school, everyone was like, well, girl, you in the number one school of journalism in the world, why would you give that up? Like, and I'm like, I don't want to do this no more. Like, and I personally am I learned at Mizzou is I'm a heart person first and a mind person second. If my heart not in something, I am not about to do it. I'm not going to do it well. I'm not going to be able to focus on it. I'm not going to be able to continue it if my heart is not in it. If I don't feel like it's going to help me, if I don't feel like I'm enjoying it, can't do it, no matter what my mind says. And that discovery has really helped me out the rest of my time in life, because I'm always checking where my heart is first. Like, where, like, how are we feeling about this? If we don't feel it, no matter how logical it may be, I'm not about to do it. So that's when I ended up changing my major to digital storytelling and Black studies. And that's really what set me up for success. Like, I was learning how to write podcast scripts, how to write digital media narratives, how to edit video, how to shoot photos. And even though I was taking it more for a marketing social media sense, it was still very helpful things to have on my resume as I applied post-grad. And then majoring in Black studies, really learning how, like, the sociology of our people, like, I took classes like historical and contemporary slavery, and how slavery back in, you know, the days of our ancestors, it's very similar to slavery in terms of the prison reform system. You know what I mean? Like, things I could not have pictured myself learning at school, I was able to not only intake, but apply for the rest of my life. And then, of course, I was very involved in school too. Like, I like to keep myself busy. So I did KCLU, so I had my own radio show. I was an indie poets where I was like the comms coordinator. I helped, like, you know, random stuff on campus. I worked at Student Success Center all 4 years of my collegiate career. And it's a whole bunch of other things that, like, really set me up for success. So I really think, had I not gone to Mizzou, I tell people this all the time, like, It has its problems. It got things that it still needs to work on. But had I not gone to Mizzou, I would not be who I am today. I would not be where I am today. And I really am grateful for those 4 years, because I could have gone anywhere else. But Mizzou really set me up to be who I am now.
So it set you up for who you are now. Mm-hmm. Set you up for the last 4 years. So where is Mizzou? Where is that experience of Mizzou taking you for the next 4 years?
So I'm 3 years out of graduation and I'm 25. So when I'm 24, I'll be 29 years old. Yeah. So in 4 years, I'll be 29. So I will have a master's in higher education, potentially. And I don't even like saying this out loud, but I'm already known with the reality situation, potentially working on a doctorate at that point in higher ed or in educational leadership or something of that nature. I hope to be, what I really want to focus on is, yes.
Hold up. You just said that you went for digital storytelling and you're minoring in Black Studies. How does that connect to higher ed? I'm curious to see the connection. Why that connection?
So there really, I mean, I'm sure if I really sat down and thought about it, there would be some, but I'm keeping a book. There really isn't. The only, like, not on the digital storytelling aspect, but more so Black Studies. Like, I really want to focus on the entire life cycle of the Black student, what it's like recruiting Black students to come into school, how their admissions process is different from predominantly white students, what it's like in terms of financial aid aspect, how they navigate doing FAFSAs, and often with lower income students, people think it's always a financial issue where they don't go or where they end up leaving school, and it's not always the case. So the recruiting of Black students, the retention of Black students, like how are we offering Black students resources that differ from what white students' needs are? Everyone knows that if you are a minority, if you are low income, or if you are anything that's outside the norm, which is typically white, you need different things, whether it's packaged different, whether it's more access, where it's more resources, whatever, you need different things to other people. So how are we offering retention services and retention resources for Black students? And then what I find even, what might be even more important is, how are we keeping Black alumni in touch with schools after they graduate? Kids from PWIs who are Black tend to not have any relationship with the school after they graduate because of how they were treated while they were in this PWI. Now, I don't say that to say that the majority of my focus means I want to work at PWI specifically, but because of my experience, that's what I can speak to. I can't speak to the HBCU experience, and I wouldn't want to because I've never been there. But I have noticed that PWIs tend to not have the greatest Black alumni relationships, even though they pump several thousands of millions of dollars into, you know, establishing alumni connections, alumni scholarships, alumni networks, but Black alumni are not always on the boards, making decisions, giving back, connecting. And then throughout that entire cycle, mentorship is lacked. So I really want to focus on the importance of mentorship, the importance of, providing resources for Black students and how that can not only develop more leadership and more increase in population, but it's also going to benefit the university at the end of the day.
Hey, you better talk that talk. Hold on. She just went crazy. I ain't going to lie.
Yeah, she's going to get a doctorate, bro. She going to get that doctorate.
No, in fact, you heard all the gems she just dropped?
Yeah, bro.
Because, like, I work in College Access right now. And like everything you said is like something that we talk about, see on like a daily basis, even with my students. So,
and it's also like this whole application process for grad school has really reopened my eyes. Like, one of the reasons that one of the schools that I was very, very, very excited to attend is no longer on my list is because of how they treat the submission process. There's no reason I got in your school in October and it's going on April. And any type of communication I've had in terms of financial aid, next steps, connecting with admitted students, et cetera, has been on my part and not yours. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's very, quite frankly, disrespectful to me, because that means you are looking at me as just a number. Additionally, there's a study that came out that said that Ivy League schools, while they can and have the endowment money to give money to lower income students in terms of scholarship and aid, they end up giving it to middle class or higher class white students because they can give them less scholarship money and they know they'll pay off the rest. You know what I mean? Like versus lower income students who you can get them scholarships, but they still might have to take out some form of a loan. You know what I mean? Like all that is just very messed up and interesting to me. And when they ask us on questions of like applications, like if you are a member of a diverse population, how will your experience help us, you know, like what will admitting you as a minority student do for our university? And it's like, okay, well, I can answer that, but what will me coming to your university do to help me when you don't have any women faculty, you don't have any Black women faculty, you barely have Black student resources, you just have the name. So why am I being asked to do anything other than come and learn? Why am I asked to now do work? Why am I asked to offer sometimes traumatic experiences so that you can say that, oh, you have a diverse population? All of that is weird. All of that is unnecessary. And all of that is a problem because we do not have a whole lot of higher ed people in that are Black in this world. And that's something that I know is a marketing. For one, like even on a business standpoint, I'm always gonna have a job. Like someone's always going to need some type of consulting, be it D&I, higher ed, admissions, whatever. And it's important work that I feel is necessary because I would not be who I am if I was not educated, if I did not go to college. That's just me. I'm not saying you have to, but for me and what I want to do, I would not be who I was if I wasn't there. And I know that college access and college retainment is such a huge issue in Black lower income minority communities, and I really do want to help solve that because it'd be clear as day, but these institutions act like they don't have the money or the resources to fix it, nor solutions to solve it.
No, definitely. I agree with everything you just said. Definitely.
Definitely. She playing like we're not going to be calling her Dr. Didaway by the time, it's you just- know.
But here's the thing. Here's the gag. I don't like school. Like, let's
you listen. That don't matter, bro. Like, you get. I can see it. We see it. All three of us. You see it. You getting the doctorate.
We'll see. We will see. I know for sure I'm going to work for a minute before I start on doctorate mode. You know what I mean? Like, I don't see myself master's going straight into it because I didn't do that for undergrad. Like, I took 3 years off, and now in the fall I'll be going to school, and it helped me out. Like, my resume is different than people who are my age,
right,
going into grad school, so I think that also helped me out as well.
Yeah, but you actually look more marketable, like in the PhD, in the doctorate world when you wait. Like, some of my cohort members, they're like 45 and plus because they took like at least 20 years or so just to get back in because they worked in the industry. So it's always that. Also, since you will come in with your master's, keep in mind that it'll probably be another master's length. It'll probably be like 1 or 2 years for you because a lot for students, if they're going for the straight PhD or they have to do a traditional master's or doctorate, they have to do their master's first, you know, get their master's thesis out the way and then do their doctorate. You wouldn't have to do that. You would go straight into your probably year 3 or 4 requirements. So it'll probably take you like less time. It'll be like 2 years maybe. It'll depend on the program.
Yeah, it's all, I gotta see. And it depends on the program. So if I go to Penn and I get a master's in a year, or if I go to UND and I get in 2, like, you know, what's that looking like?
Master's at Penn, they will probably knock it to 1.5 years. Because you're already an alumni.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Lots to decide.
Well, no, we share over here, and you know, it's just jokes. We definitely cheering for you. So, and as somebody that works within this space, you know, I'm cheering for you too, especially as a Black person. So, because we need more of y'all. Like, even before we, you know, continue with the questions and stuff, like, I totally resonate with the point of like seeing people that look like you and needing people in those spaces because, you know, for all my Mizzou people that are fans of the pod, you know, Miss Velma, right? Donald, Darnell, Mr. Darnell, yeah, in the case or whatever, unless it's called something different now. I don't know if it is, but, you know, all people like that, you know.
Even the few years we had Kevin McDonald as the,
you
know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, yeah.
And here's what's crazy, and then I promise we can move on. So,
no, let's talk about it. Fuck it. Let's talk about it.
The UMB advisor, Sharon Fries-Britt, right? I mentioned in my personal statement to their schools that part of the reason I wanted to go is because she was tapped to do research on Mizzou post 2015. So she's like one of the co-faculty leads for a research project about how Mizzou has responded. She calls me and she's like, hey, do you know Kevin McDonald? And I'm like, I don't know him personally, but every time I would see him, he was always very helpful and nice to the students. I know he was like our vice provost, the president of DNI. She knows him personally. So like they're tight in terms of colleagues, which is why she was on Mizzou's project. I say it to say like, the higher education world is small. Like only 8% of people have a master's degree in higher ed. And of that 8%, only like 34%, I think, are Black, or it's 34% of them are Black women. So 34% of 8% is a very, 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 very small number, which means that in that world, everybody knows everybody, which only builds your network of connections that you can come from. You know what I mean? So that in itself is exciting. Like the fact that someone who don't know me from a can of paint, but just read my words on my personal statement and was able to connect me or know someone who I was in connection with at one point is just very, very dope to me. And I look forward to even that, like making those relationships and like reading those faculty works and things like that.
Exactly. Look, because look, as simple as the phrase is, you know, you always can go back to it for a lot of things. We all we got, right? Like in this world, within certain spaces, you know, you have to, I'm a big advocate of, you know, building those bridges and having those connections within people, with people that look like us, because it's so important. It's no point in being divisive, you know, when we can build each other up and do so much great work. So, you know, definitely, for sure.
I definitely agree on that. As the old saying goes, you're only as strong as your network, right? So you can know so much, but it's only strong, you're only as strong as your network. And, you know, that's something that like, we all got to learn to do. And I guess for me, I'm just curious, like in your time living in Washington, D.C., is that like one of the things that you learned about yourself that you had to like learn to network, or are some like some other things that you learned living in your time in D.C. in order to grow?
Def has to learn to network, but that was primarily because I came here not knowing anybody. You know what I mean? Like I had family who stayed in PG County, Maryland. And then I would intern. So I was riding the bus in the metro, hour and a half there and back to go to my internship. Work till 5, might squeeze a workout in and come right back. So my days were 12 hours long, 7 to 7. And I was exhausted, okay? I was miserable when I first came here. I'm like, I don't have friends. It take too long to get anywhere. I don't have time to meet anybody. My internship is rigorous and things like that. So I was miserable. And I say this story every single time that I was on the digital corporate affairs team at Edelman, one of like the biggest PR things in the world or whatever. There was a girl who was also my fellow co-intern on the same team. But the way the internship room was set up, she sat across the room. And I'm talking about people are locked in the intern room. I'm talking about no talking. People are barely getting up to take lunch. And I could never talk to her because she would leave earlier than I did. And I could never speak with her. I finally got early enough to meet her in the kitchen. And she was in the kitchen. She waved to me. And I ran up to her and I grabbed her and said, be my friend. I need you to be my friend. Like, quit playing with me. Just be my friend. And she, and that was what, 3 years ago? That is one of my best friends in DC now. Like, literally. We neither of us work at Element anymore. I talk to her every day. I hang out with her. That is my homegirl. You know what I'm saying? But had I not said anything, had I viewed her as my competition, I never would have had a friend. You know what I mean? And from her network, she went to Howard. So, of course, all her friends Black and all of them Howard alum. So my network grew from knowing her. And we also knew of another girl, another Howard alum, who was actually working at Edelman. And that's how I began to gain the few friends that I have. I don't say few friends as in like, I ain't met nobody, but I say friendship very, very strongly. Friendship is work. You can't have 50 million friends and be getting the same type of level of, you know, effort or whatever. And because I try to do my best to be a good friend, I can't have no whole lot of them. So had I not leapt with her and extended her my network, I would not be where I am. I'd probably be miserable because I wouldn't have even known that I can do that. I can make friends in settings that it can be very, very competitive. DC is a very, very competitive place. Like, everyone is trying to, you know, get a certain clearance level in the government, you know, run for office, work on the Hill, be a manager, get their master's, get their doctorate, all this other stuff. It's always something that people have going on. I love the hustle and bustle of it and to see so many Black people reach for their goals, but it can be very competitive. Some people want to know you because they want to know where you work, or they want to intern where you interned, or they want to see if you can get them into this. And that's the reality situation. And sometimes it can be very off-putting, but I have to learn that I'm going to be my genuine Memphis accent itself, regardless of who in the room. You know what I mean? And because of that, people are going to gravitate to it or not. And that's going to establish me very genuine relationships, regardless. So I feel like I kind of answered that. Like, it def taught me, like, being genuine no matter what, being honest and never being afraid to reach out no matter how dramatic it might be.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and that's some real stuff that you talked about with the competitiveness within the city and people trying to move up and all that kind of stuff. But you also talked about, you know, bringing people together and, you know, expanding your network and all that kind of stuff. Talk to us about the Lex Mix and where that inspiration comes from, because your ability to send out music and playlists and all that kind of stuff and really put people on to different, you know, different stuff that's going on within the month, within, you know, new music that's come out, your own personal recommendations, you're now getting people to send in, you know, recommendations or requests for playlists. Where did this even, like, all start and come from?
So I'll say this. I come from a very music-oriented family. Like, all my aunties and uncles had to sing in the choir at some point. All my cousins did, too. I was, you know, from, like, middle school on, a church girl. I used to direct the youth choir. I used to sing soprano when it wasn't my turn. I used to play the violin. Like, I used to go to all-city music, all that. That was me. And so music has always been an important part of my life. So then my sophomore year at Mizzou, I connected with my mentor. And my mentor at the time was the host of Damn Good Jams on KCLU. And they were about to graduate, so they brought me in order to, you know, take on and pass down the show. And I did college radio for 3 years straight, Thursday night, 10 p.m., 12 a.m., like, one of the hottest blocks to have, but of course one of the hardest blocks to have, because if you in college, Thursday night, you outside. You know what I mean? You at Big 12. You out, you downtown. So, but it really challenged me. It's like, okay, like, let me make this the best I can make it. So me and my co-host at the time, Stephen Qualls, we ended up, like, bringing in guests and being very, very intentional with music. Like, what's the theme this week? Has it coincide with our topics? Like, how do we bring on student leaders, make them feel comfortable and ask them questions? How can, if we bring DJs on and do sets, how can we make sure that their set is as seamless as possible? How do we avoid drama, like what people say on the show? You know what I mean? All of that was important. And it really taught me the importance of valuing people. Like, you have to play to the crowd. Like, yeah, you can have your favorite songs, but if everyone is not really trying to feel that today, then you might need to play to the crowd and really engage your crowd's interest. So I took that. Oh, and fun fact, my mama used to do college radio. So when she was at U of M, University of Memphis, she was a radio host as well. So I think that kind of passed down into me too. That being said, doing the Lex Mix was like almost inevitable, I would say. I had to learn, you know, I wanted to highlight artists that are not always talked about on the Music Friday. You know what I mean? Like, I try not to put Drake in everything. I don't put Beyonce in everything. I don't put Lil Babies and in the very popular artists of the world into everything. I really try to highlight artists that, you know, you might not know they dropped something, or you might not know that they're coming out with this. And I try to make sure that I kept it to 6 songs so that people are not overwhelmed with things to listen to. And, you know, build community. Like, I have, like, I think 400 subscribers at this point. I don't have to do a whole lot of pushes in terms of building because, you know, like, it's unnecessary. Like, I really am happy with the community that I have and how they respond to me. They give me suggestions. They're sending me music. They're, you know, actually listening and sharing my playlist. You know what I mean? And those organic moments just from what I was doing at KCLU was just building upon it in a different format.
Yeah, it'd be the slept on artists that, you know, aren't always mainstream. They be having the fire songs. You know what I mean? Like I got put on to somebody, it might've been a couple of weeks ago. She did like the, believe it was the chorus for like an Eminem song. Joyce Rice, I believe is her name. Tough. Like, she is so tough, and her records are just, you know, they're really good. And I think she might be coming out with her debut maybe soon. I don't know if it's her debut album, but I'm really excited to hear it. And if I hadn't even done like that digging, you know, to see who she was, I would have never, you know, learned all that. So it's always, yeah, you'll always have your mainstream people, but, you know, I definitely, you know, always try to tap into like unknown people if I can. And Spotify actually does a really good job of that, putting you onto like songs you would have never heard.
Not sponsored by Spotify, just to let that be known.
Although we could be.
If y'all want, you could just hit us up, you know.
Now, just letting that be known.
No, Spotify over Apple Music. That's my opinion, though, but that's a whole nother talk. You know, I don't really rock with Apple Music.
But like, no, on that tip though, Derek, like, you know, there's some other songstress like I've been listening to. Like, she's really dope. She's not on Apple Music yet. Like, she's on SoundCloud, but like, she decent as hell though. My name Crystal Jim. She decent though.
I knew exactly where you were going.
He just slid that. You slid that in so well.
I do. Shout out to the homie Crystal.
Shout out Crystal. But even like, you know, tying in with the Lex Mix, you know, to be able to have this following, you know, and be successful, you had to build it right from the ground up on social media. And, you know, if anybody knows Lex, I know she hates to hear it, but I'm gonna say it anyway, you know. What, you go viral like twice a week?
Something? Bro, like, I look up every other day. I was like, oh, look, I got 10,000 retweets. Oh, you know.
10K likes. That's normal. Right. Okay, whatever. But
damn, it's only been an hour? Okay, cool. Like,
and she just be talking, or she say, you know, she just be talking.
You know me. Let's be very, very clear. I never go on Twitter and I'm like, oh, this gonna get them, or like, oh, this gonna make shade room. I'm never like that. I'm not that girl. Like, I'm really not. People do that and I'll knock them for it, but I do not get on Twitter to go viral. I don't get on Twitter to, you know, get the attention of anything. I literally be on there just getting the tweet off, getting the thought off. And for whatever reason, It happens like that. I don't know if it's because I be saying things that people don't know how to articulate in words, or if it's just something that's very relatable or what, but I never get on Twitter. I'm like, okay, you know what? This gonna be the one that get me famous, or this gonna be the one that give me the retweets and give me following. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's at some points it's weird. Like, the weirdest thing that's happened is I went viral for something that I don't know. I went viral like late last year. Mm-hmm. And the DM request portion of your DMs is a very, very scary place. Let's be clear. So I get a DM from someone, they're like, hi. And I'm like, hi. And they're like, how are you? And I'm like, what's up? And they're like, I saw your handle on a tweet on the Shade Room and I wanted to reach out and be friends. And I'm like, no, thank you, but I appreciate you for reaching out. Like, you know what I mean? Because it was like one of those like weird body accounts, you know what I mean? And they're like, oh, I just try to make friends and all the girls on here is mean, bye, whatever. And they block me. And I'm like, whoa. Like,
not you, one of the mean girls.
So, like, we're not one of the mean girls for taking my space. Like, whoa, you know what I mean? Like, it gets weird. It can get very, very weird, which is why I don't try to do it. Like, I going viral and being famous or whatever, quote unquote. And mind you, I'm not even no type of Twitter famous. Like, there are people with way more followers and followings and accounts than I am. You know
that's
what I mean?
Debatable. I don't know. That's debatable. At this point, listen, Lex.
What I tell you is every week, bro, by the time this podcast comes out, I guarantee it is the 14th. By the time this comes out, later this week, I promise you she'll have another tweet with at least 5,000 retweets on it. Yeah.
But I don't understand why. And it's also like, you gotta understand, like, the more you tweet, the more you open yourself to be followed and noticed. The more you open yourself up to be followed and noticed, the more you have people in your mentions. The more people in your mentions means a whole bunch of crazy stuff in the mentions. People get real cute in the mentions, and I get real cute back. You know what I mean? So that in itself is like weird. I've had people try to, you know, make things deeper than what it is and say I can't comprehend and all this stuff like that. And I'm like, baby girl, I'm not really the one nor the two for that. So keep it real cute and sweet, because the moment I go left, I'm gonna go right, and it's not gonna be nice. So that's why I don't even try to get myself caught up in it. You know what I'm saying? It happens. I'm happy seeing other people relate to me or whatever, but I never try to go viral, because the other side of going viral is not good.
So with all of that, you know, if you're not even like, you know, it's for someone that's not even like looking to, like, you know, have that reaction, how did you grow your social media following? Like, how did you become, you know, or I don't want to say become this person, but how did you, I guess, gain all of these followers and things like that?
Was it just off the strength of like the spend a night bag? Like, is that it? Like,
yeah, that was a good one too. I remember that one. That was a good one.
I mean, honestly, let me also be clear. I've had my Twitter since like 2009. So that gets something to do with it too. Like, it's not like I just got it. It was in the past 5 years, I had it for 12. So surely, slowly but surely, that has something to do with it. And it's also like, you have to consider, technically I've transitioned through three different geographic and social networks. So I was in Memphis if I got my Twitter in 2009, I graduated in 2014, like 5 years before leaving. And I was at Mizzou for 4 years, and now I've been in the DC area for 3. So all of that comes with a different following. Like, if I'm following people that are new to my geographic network, of course they're following me back, and that becomes a cycle as well. So that's one thing, just off of like data dynamics, whatever. Other thing too is like, I'm consistent. I don't necessarily have breaks within Twitter, not because I feel like I have to maintain a brand, but because I enjoy it. I enjoy being able to start and stop discourse, to be up to date with what people are thinking, to live tweet shows. Like, the Grammys are coming on tonight. I can't wait for that. Like, that's my type of carrying on. I love like live tweeting award shows and seeing what other people think about the things that we're all watching together. And I think I use it in different ways. Like, I use it for my personal enjoyment of just retweeting things I find funny and sharing my comments. I also use it for like brand ways. Like, I am in music. I make music. So of course I'm going to be up on New Music Fridays discussing my thoughts on things that just dropped with other people. If I am in higher ed, of course I'm going to be retweeting or sharing articles I find interesting to people who look like me or can relate to it. If I am a marketer, of course I'm going to comment on Clubhouse and how I really feel about the nature of certain social media advertisement strategies and things like that. I use it for different facets of my life, which means I use it consistently. And me being in marketing, I kind of have to be tapped in so I can know what's going on, what's working and what's not. So I think all that together just grew it for me.
Yeah, I feel that. And you also, like you said, you also have to be, you know, you could have your Twitter for a while, but if you don't sort of seek out that sort of thing and really just build that interaction, then you're not really going to have the same experience. Because I know lately for me, I've had my Twitter for a while, but like lately mine has just been like podcasts, maybe some sports stuff, maybe some, you know, jokes, but I've largely been staying off of social media much more. And that's not for any one particular reason. It's just like, you know, I got real life shit to do. Like, I got stuff to do here. Like, that's more important. Having said all that, we know that you're gonna, you know, like we said, we're speaking into existence, Dr. Didaway. We know that you want to go into higher education, all that kind of stuff. But like, as you said, you are good at this. This is a thing that you have, and we've seen people sort of take these platforms that they have on social media, and then, you know, parlay that into something else. Do you ultimately see yourself having a career in media, maybe?
I honestly do not. I do not. Because I do not want this to feel like work. And once I've learned the hard way, once things feel like work that you love, you end up not loving it. Part of the reason why I have no problem leaving marketing social media is because it's beginning to feel a lot more like work, because I do it for 9 to 5. I do it for a side gig, and I do it for my personal enjoyment. So I'm constantly tapped into everything that is going on. That can be overwhelming, especially in a space that's constantly changing and that's wide open. Anything can be on the internet. Anything can be on Twitter. Like, anything. Things that can be triggering, things can, that can be very, very sad, things that can cause you anger because of how you feel about the topic, all of that. Like, and that's why I'm very content shifting from making that my sole field of work. So my fear is that if I don't know, become a music podcast interviewer or end up working for a media company or whatever, it's going to feel like work. And just think, like, there are certain do's and don'ts in media as a profession. There are certain things you cannot say. You can't have certain biases, all this other stuff, right? I don't want to be involved in that at this stage in my life. So I can't call it. If I had to decide tomorrow, it would definitely be a no. I love the space I'm in now. I love where I'm in now. I love how I only owe myself something. I don't owe anyone else anything. When you become a career person, especially starting out, that changes. So I only owe it to me. I don't owe it to no artist, no genre, no company, no label, no nothing. So I definitely don't see myself doing it for media, but if I do, like, it will definitely be very, very far down the line.
Yeah, I see that, but I just want to talk, I guess I want to at least little dive and go back, like, to your home beginnings a little bit. I want to talk about your time in Memphis. I want to talk about, like, how has being from Memphis influenced you in the way you approach life?
That's a good question. I would definitely say that being from Memphis, like, it death has ignited a hustle in me, a different type of grit and grind, where it's the Grizzlies in me. I'm always trying to do what's next or do something better than I've done it before. I definitely see myself becoming somebody who can navigate through different areas, who's not afraid of adversity, who is not afraid of, like, hard times or being down for a little bit in order to get to a greater goal. Of course, Memphis is a music city. Like, it's a hub of blues and soul. Like, Stax Museum is there, Stax Records. The first radio station solely targeting Black African-American audiences is in Memphis. You know what I mean? WDIA. So all of that plays a role. And again, like, a lot of my work is very centered in Black people. Memphis is full of Black people, successful Black people, amazing, dynamic Black people. Like, all of my work is centered in things that relate to or help us. And I think it wouldn't be that way if I wasn't from where I'm from. And, like, again, I never lived anywhere else until 2014, very, very recently. So seeing the city change, seeing myself grow into womanhood and adulthood in Memphis, all of that has impacted me. Like, I wouldn't want to be from anywhere else. I plan on retiring in Memphis, on Harbortown to be exact. I love it. I always schedule visits to go. I can't wait to go back and hug my mama. But I would not be this, I can't even put in the words exactly who I am, but whoever she is, I would not be without being from Memphis.
Yeah, I definitely feel like, you know, where we grow up, you know, it's definitely, and it influences us, right? And, you know, those dynamics are really interesting. And of course, you know, we all a fan of you, so I know, so Memphis, they're doing something right, you know, the people that come from there. So no, definitely, because, you know, between you and, you know, even our friend Zarek, you know, and all
shout out Z,
you know, I haven't met a bad Memphis person yet, you know what I'm saying? So, you know,
as a homie Devin say, you know, Chicago and Memphis, Dre from Memphis, you know what I'm saying? Like, Chicago, yeah. And Memphis, real strong, bro. Like, that's, I feel like we should be like sister cities or something.
Chicago is Southern people in coats.
That's all it is. That's all it is. That's all we are.
That's facts.
For sure, for sure. So I kind of want to steer this next question, you know, in a different direction. You know, with these interviews where, you know, celebrating International Women's History Month. And I feel like a lot of the time there are, especially social media, there are a lot of things on the surface that people get wrong about, you know, women, their experiences and things like that. And that's why we're bringing you all, you know, on the show and everything. So what I want to ask you is, what is a common misconception that people have, or that you believe people have, of successful Black women?
Or at least one you can think of right now, because I'm pretty sure there are a lot you can think of instantly.
I think that, I think one that I can think of at the moment is that there can't be more than one of us. And that's very, 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 very irritating, because I don't think that started with successful Black women. I think that started with the spaces that successful Black women try to enter. There can be more than one successful Black singer. There can be more than one successful Black actress, business owner, real estate mogul, doctor, dentist, DJ, radio host. Like, there is room for more than one of us. Ever, I feel that Black women are trying to enter spaces that already weren't made for one of us. And so when we get there, the people who are in charge or leading these spaces are not realizing that, hey, it don't have to be just one. You don't have to have one Black woman, in order to say you have diversity. You don't have to pick and choose which one is the best. You don't have to pick and choose which one can fit this mold. Like, I don't think that started by us. I think that started by these fields we're trying to enter. And because of that, it trickled down into a little bit of our network, where sometimes, because of outside forces, successful Black women feel as if they have to beat the next person. I've had to unsubscribe from that. Like, just because my light shines on Thursdays and your light shines on Wednesdays does not mean our lights don't shine together. You know what I mean? It don't make one better than the other. And that can be very, very damaging thinking in terms of building network, building community, because at the end of the day, yeah, you might be the only Black woman here, but you are the only Black woman here. So if you don't have no network of support behind you, then it's like, what do you have? You know what I mean? I don't know where my career is going to go. I don't know where I'll end up. I don't know if I'll be a consultant, a provost, you know, a higher an educator, where if I want to teach, I don't know that, but I don't want to be the first for the sake of being the first. I want to be someone who, if I am first, I'm making sure I'm not last. And I really do think that people tend to believe there can only be one of us everywhere.
That's real. That's real. Especially as you try to go up, you know, bringing as many other people up with you. I feel that. All right. We're trying to end on a, you know, we talk about a lot of very serious topics. We try to, you know, I want to hear from you as a fan of music. What has been your favorite project or album or whatever you want to call it has dropped in the last 12 months? So from March of last year to March of now, what has been the one thing you're like, yo, this is so dope?
I got two. It's Chloe and Halle, and it's 21 Savage Metro Boomin. Those are my two. Those are my two. Like, Chloe, Halle, they have done it again. I mean, the way that they've allowed their growth in womanhood to be explored in this album is very, 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 very dope. I think that the way that they've been able to create this an era, like, people, a lot of artists are dropping artists and dropping content and then not touching it ever again. You know what I mean? Like, whereas people like Doja Cat, her album dropped in 2019. She just dropped a single or dropped a video for Streets this past week. Bruno Mars is riding 24 Karat Magic for at least 2 years. You know what I'm saying? Like, people are neglecting the power of making your album an era. And I really think that Chloe and Halle have tapped into that. With 21 Savage and Metro Boomin, it was just really dope to see a project, you know, have so many influence, so many previous Southern influences, and still be very original and his own. 21 Savage is one of the most consistent rappers in the game that we have right now. The word consistency is what I really want to emphasize here. And he yet again has shown an amazing project that I still personally listen to. I love the way that it's set up. I love how it feels like an album. I love the Morgan Freeman inclusions. I love the samples on it. So those two have been my favorite so far.
Yeah, I appreciate that 21 lets his like music breathe in between too. Because I Am Greater Than I was not like only a year, but like it was some time to allow us to like miss him and all that kind of stuff. And then he comes back with, like you said, a very focused, very, you know, compact album. You know, I think there needs to be more of that too, because, you know, we see a lot of artists, including some artists that I like. Like, I love Larry June, but I was telling Jesse, Larry June has dropped like 8 projects in the last 2 years. You know what I'm saying? Like at some point, it's almost like sort of indistinguishable, like what song is on this or how this feels, you know, like that sort of thing. So I do appreciate when artists are like, this is it. This is what you're going to get for now. I'm going to go away. I'm going to work on the next thing. When it comes back to you, it's going to be great too. Like, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. It's really interesting because some folks, it's interesting. First of all, I want to say Chloe Holly album was actually one of my favorite albums too to come out, because they didn't really delve into that Good Girl Gone Bad trope. You know, they didn't turn into like YIT into like Risky Provocateurs. They didn't really go at that point. And for it to be released around the time of, like, you know, where we're talking about things to happen with George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and everything that's going on, even with Altoyan that passed away. I think like that was a very important to talk about. You know, it was a moment in time, I would say, not only for women in general, but like especially for Black women. And, you know, I just wanted to touch on that. The thing about that y'all was saying for these artists, like, you know, Chloe and Hailey and even Doja Cat and even Bruno Mars, is that it's kind of like a pro and con. It's like a pro, if you release a bunch of music and no one knows you, it's okay, you're getting your name thrown out. Okay, that's fine. But it's like almost when some artists lose his art where they forget that once you get a mainstream buzz, and I'm kind of pointing at the baby with this, you're supposed to just let it sit. You know, like you made a bunch of mixtapes and stuff and it dropped. It's like an early or late 2008-2000 model. You know, you let your mixtapes bubble up, you get your attention, you get your underground attention, you finally get that mainstream radio hit, you're supposed to let it ride out. And especially you can do that now when you have social media at your hands. Like Doja Cat benefited a lot from the Silhouette Challenge. So you're seeing her ride off of that. Hell, we've seen more of Chloe in particular embracing even more of the things that she had on her album with Hailey, being even more of her own. And we're seeing that on Twitter and stuff. And I'm pretty sure a lot of folks, Josh in particular, can appreciate that. So it's been pretty good.
Yo, I love that Black woman. I ain't gonna hold you. I love that Black woman.
But like, that's to y'all point though, it's like, you don't really need to drop a bunch of, we're in a streaming age now. So it's like, artists are more so important by numbers than they are by substance. You know, even older statesmen in the game, Drake, they, you know, like just keeps dropping like the same
type of feel,
but it's like in abundance. And it's like, you're one of the biggest artists of the decade. You can just let that ride, you know, like a Kendrick or like a Cole. But when you're talking about, just to bring that back, when you're talking about, I love Memphis music, because Memphis music never shies away from its roots. Every motherfucker still has a 3-6 Mafia, Project Pat influence. You cannot get away from it. You will always hear it. You know, artists from Juicy J, of course, Project Pat, they definitely pioneered that. And then you even got boys like Young Dolph, you even got Yo Gotti, Key Glock, all of them, right? But I guess my question to you is like, if I had to make you pick between Juicy J, Project Pat, Young Dolph, or even Yo Gotti, who are you taking out of that mix?
Sorry, this is our one gotta go segment.
One has to go.
Juicy J, Project Pat, Young Dolph, or Yo Gotti?
It's gonna have to be Dolph.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say Gotti.
Y'all have to understand. This is what I tell people who always ask me this. You are asking someone who grew up on Yo Gotti and exited Memphis when Young Dolph was coming up like that.
Yeah.
Pick between like my high school hero and someone who is very, very good, but I am not as connected with their music as I am with Gotti's and Project Pat and 3-6. Like,
yeah.
like y'all, and not y'all as in y'all three, but the world around us picks Dawes. I cannot do that. I cannot take out touchdown. What's wrong with you? Dance, what's up? Sell my dope. I can't separate them songs from my life like that. I cannot. I don't want to go away with Preach or any of Dawes' amazing music that he's dropped since I've been growing up either. But if I had to choose, it's going to have to be Dawes. Like, that's like asking me, would I rather have, I don't know, the first formula of Doggone Fruit Loops or the new one that they got going on right now? Like, just because it's new and it's good, that's what I'm used to. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, I give you that because, you know, a lot of people don't realize that, like, Gotti's been around for a minute. Gotti's, like, worked with a lot of folks. Like, one of my favorite songs by Gucci Bricks, there is a verse with Gotti in there. And Gotti, like, totally killed that. Dolph is relatively recent. Dolph, like, popped off around 2014. So, like, a lot of people don't really realize that. But, damn, that is hard, though. Because between all four of them, Dolph surprisingly, I'd say Dolph knows how to make an album, like a commercial album. Dolph knows how to run, like, Dolph knows how to keep a melody going. But Gotti definitely.
And he get that from Juicy J. So, it's like, you know, he get that from Juicy. Juicy is still making amazing albums. So I hear that, but yeah. Afraid not.
Man. Well, all right. I can't even be mad at that explanation. Lex, is there anything else you would like to say today before we close out?
No, not really. I think we covered a lot of ground in this, you know, in this recording. I'm really happy I got to chat with you all. I'm happy you all chose me out of amazing other Black women as one of the ones to highlight. And I can't wait to, you know, see what y'all got next.
Well, we appreciate you coming on. For Jesse Pink, for Derek Small, and for Kobe, and for Lex, thank you all for listening to this episode of the It's Just Jokes podcast. Shout out to D Will for everything behind the scenes. Oh, I didn't shout out Dre in the beginning. My bad. Shout out Dre for the intro music. Shout out to D Will for everything behind the scenes. We appreciate y'all. And shout out to Dalezier and King Boy for the outro music. Next week is the final episode of our Spotlight series. You guys are going to love who we have on. But tune in next week to see who it is. And we'll see y'all then. Bye.
See y'all.
Bye, y'all.